matters with certified financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. Every week I go in and visit with Kevin Miller and have an absolute blast. We're going to go ahead and replay that. It's about 30 minutes every Monday. We'd like to hear your feedback if you enjoy it. If not, let us know. And I'll be talking to you live in about 30 minutes.
And 580 KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. Blessed to be a part of your day. It is amazing what can happen in America today. And we all know the success of our great friend, Dave Petzo, only in America, only with Petzo on 580 KIDO. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
Good to have you with us here.
It's so awesome to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about some economic news that came out. It's interesting that Obama leaves and all of a sudden the GDP goes from whatever it was to 1.9%. It's almost like the media planned it. You know, we had this growth of 1 or 3 or whatever. Now it's disappointing that it's at 1.9, even though it has nothing to do with the administration that just took office.
That's correct. No, it does not. Are they playing it that way? That seems odd. I mean, it's actually, it was a goodbye, Obama. Here's my final mediocre number. We've never had this many GDP reports years coming off a recession. We've never grown 3%, and we did it under Obama. That's never happened before. It's a very disappointing report, no doubt about it. 1.9% on GDP when they were expecting near 3, and lower housing numbers as well, Kevin, both new and existing. That bumps around a lot, so I don't put a lot on that. I'm more concerned about the GDP numbers, but we'll see. Remember how we've talked about this, Kevin, the consumer confidence and business confidence has soared since the election. If, in fact, that continues and translates into people going out and doing things, then GDP will pick up.
Now let's talk a little bit about the Dave Petzo victory lap. And by the way, our friend from State College, Pennsylvania, Terry, apologized. His computer went down, but he was ready for you last week. We'll see if he's ready for you this week.
Uh-huh.
But I look at a $20,000 glow about you.
Right. Kevin, it is a big deal. I know people say it's just a number, and that's what, you know, I remember when I first got in the industry, that's what I'd say about, you know, Dow 2000, Dow 3000, you know, because it was a little bit, hey, you know, really, it's just a number, guys, is it? And it is. That's true. And it's not. It completely misses the point that this is another major milestone that makes us stop and say, wow, you mean the Dow is at 20,000? And when you started in the industry, the Dow was less than 1,000. Nothing has created this much wealth, not just in my lifetime, not in my career, but in our parents and our grandparents. It just continues to work in spite of all the naysayers and the doom and the gloom. And whatever amount of money somebody manages, it doesn't matter if you've just stood around on the sidelines and told people the sky was falling, the world is ending, stay out of the, quotes, Wall Street casino. Then what you wind up with is you wind up with a circumstance that you missed. So congratulations, you missed yet another double and yet another double and yet another double. And again, the Dow is up, what is that, 25-fold since I've been in the industry? Nothing has come close. And that in spite of 2 50% corrections just in the last 15 years. And forget about all the market crashes and Asian worries and flus and blah, blah, blah. All
Asian flus?
Yeah, the Asian flu was a big deal about, I'm going to call it 15 years ago. Huge deal. An Asian currency crisis. Remember the Thai baht was going to melt down the world? And, of course, we had another normal 10, 15% correction.
I remember the yen. Now, let's get to some business here. From our friends at the Idaho Business Review. Why? Because I actually broke down and bought a subscription. So
get out of here.
I figured we'd have some good content for this segment, as opposed to Kevin makes it up as we go, and Dave tries to figure out what the heck Kevin is doing with his questions.
You've done a very good job making it up, Kevin. I'm impressed.
How about, thank you, sir. How about this one? Sales of existing U.S. homes fell in December as supplies hit a 17-year low. I don't know if that really impacts us here in the Treasure Valley because we see building going on all the time.
Yeah.
But what does that mean?
Well, it is. Again, I think it means it's a one-month glitch because you're talking about there just isn't enough supply for new housing to have a big number in December. So I think it's a one-month deal. I'm not too worried about it. But Kevin, again, as we talked about, the housing numbers were very, very poor in December. Again, they bounce around a lot. I wouldn't worry too much about that number. As far as it being an indicator that we're heading into recession, unless it is consistent for 2, 3, 4 months.
Well, and in addition to that, we've got the Idaho legislature coming up. They're taking a look at a tax cut, some of the proposals. Majority Leader Mike Moyle of Star said he wants to exempt the first $750 of income from taxation, as well as reduce the top income in corporate rates from 7.4% to 7.2%. The entire proposal is estimated to provide $51 million in tax relief. Again, from this article in the Business Review, actually via the Associated Press, compared with neighboring states, Idaho's top individual income tax and corporate income tax rates are higher than Montana's and Utah's. Wyoming and Nevada do not tax those categories. Of course, Montana has that incredible property tax, I guess. They just tax you on everything. Mm-hmm. Like you register your car, it's $800 or something like that in mm-hmm. Montana. But what, if anything, would have that impact? By the way, here's another one. You might like this one. Meanwhile, Representative Janet Tuhol of Idaho Falls pitched a bill that would bump the exemption of Idaho's surcharge on business equipment to $250,000. Currently, only the first $100,000 of a business personal property, desks and computers to semiconductor equipment, is exempt from taxation. That would be about $8 million. What do you think? I mean, you're a big fan of that.
Well,
writing things off.
Yeah. I just don't declare stuff. It's,
right. Well, don't say too much here.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. Now, Kevin, I honestly, all three of those to me sounded like irrelevant peanuts. I mean, we're not going to tax the first $750. Really? Like, that's a high tax rate. It's absolutely peanuts. It sounds like they're just whittling around the edges. Tax reform, to me, should be taken seriously and done appropriately. Like, why don't we take and cut, just like routinely, if we're going to do something, let's just take and get rid of 75% of the tax code for Idaho. That'd be a good start. And it's not because I'm opposed to this part over here. I'm opposed to the complexity. And tinkering around the edges on not taxing the first $750, or when we say writing things off, Kevin, what we're talking about is expensing it in the first year. You can expense up to $250,000. That should impact, I don't know, five companies out there?
Right.
Yeah, it doesn't impact people. This is not a broad impact. So I think it's great you get your name on a bill. But the reality is, unless you can give me a reason why this is incredibly important, other than you are lobbying for one particular company, I don't understand why it's important. And Idaho's tax rate is stupidly high. Washington State has zero, and that's, you know, a liberal bastion. So, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense that we have to be the highest in the area, other than Oregon. Of course, they've done a very good job at getting theirs super high. But we are in a very high tax place, and I know there's a lot of reasons why, with us being rural, but so is Montana and so on and so forth. But it is a very, very high, and I wish they would address it. But I think it's most important to the nation, to Idaho, to the overall economy, to have tax reform on a national basis and not us fiddling around and tinkering. I can't imagine pulling the whole legislature together to argue about whether the first $750 needs to be taxed or not.
Our great friend Dave Petzo with us, the Petzo Center, Petzo Financial, Petzo on Facebook and Twitter. From the Idaho Department of Labor, and again from the Idaho Business Review, let's see, we're looking at job growth here from at least seven industries in the next 2 years. Leisure and hospitality to grow by 6.8%, transportation and trade by 3.2%, healthcare and social assistance by 4.7%, mm-hmm. professional services 7%, finance 4.8%, manufacturing 3.4%, construction an astounding 14.6%.
Wow.
Maybe it's time that we go back and get our...
I got a hammer somewhere.
I know.
Yes. Wow, that's incredible. What a big... That's just a huge number, Kevin.
And you're going to love this. 78,000, they're estimated 78,000 unfilled positions.
In construction?
In those industries.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Well, it goes to show you, too, that we really are near full employment. You may not have the job you want. You may not be getting the salary you want. But we are, almost all employers are looking for good people. We are. Same thing.
You're hiring?
Yeah. Yeah. If we find the right person in our industry.
How tough do you vet people there?
How tough do we vet them?
Can you put in a good word for me at the Petso industry?
It depends on the position. Yes, we.
I have prior janitorial experience.
Do you? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. All right. Coming. You're very enthusiastic there. All right. I'll stick with my day job. Coming up next, we'll hear from Mark and Eagle. And if you have a question for Dave Petso, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You're listening to 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's Talk Station. 580-KITO.
Parents, hear that? That's your 3 o'clock wake-up call. If your kid's home alone after school, don't hit snooze. 3 to 6 is prime time for trouble. It's when a lot of kids first start drinking. So check in every day. Sign them up for after-school activities and make sure they can't access alcohol at home. Find more ways to keep your kid alcohol-free at BeTheParents.org. Sponsored by BeTheParents.org, the Idaho State Broadcasters Association, and this station.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
580 KIDO. Dave Petso with us, Kevin Miller. Let's go to Mark in Eagle for Dave Petso. Hello, Mark.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. First off, I want to, did you see the Drudge Report interview you guys the other day about how the world's wealthiest gained something like, what, $16 billion with a B as a baker, $16 billion to be taken office? You know, the stock market may go up to 20,000, but for the average working class Joe out there, it isn't making a darn bit of difference in their pocketbook. I can tell you a lot of these big corporations that I think Mr. Petso could have verified, they're buying back their own stock. This is not helping. I know a lot of people have invested in stocks, and when the stock market is going up, they're not seeing it really in their portfolio or their 401k. The other thing I want to mention, too, is, Dave, would you please answer the question for me as far as, if you don't remember, Obama deliberately had the consumer price index removed from letting people know what he had the power, so we really wouldn't find out the truth of how bad inflation is. You know, you could go into the market and milk and eggs are cheap, right? But look at the cost of your average goods, though. Tires, everything for your car, they haven't gone down at all. Fuel might be going down, but the average food prices, they have stayed the same or have gone up, if anything. And I'd like to see the consumer price index go back in there. But the problem is that they actually show how much inflation we actually are experiencing out there, then they'll blame Trump for it probably. But what's your thoughts on it, sir?
Well, that's a lot of different things. First of all, the CPI is still there, and the government, as it always has adjusted it over the years. I would argue that the real CPI is higher. I don't think anybody thinks it's not, than the government reports. And although it is clearly we should make adjustments for technology, cars last ridiculously long periods of time now, and yet we still compare the price of a car comparably to what it was years ago. So some adjustments need to be made, but it's definitely higher to live. But what people always miss is the taxes. Taxes are much higher, and that's the one that's gone through the roof much faster than in the rate of inflation. It's
Would you say then that the media was helping, like they all have during the 8 years of Obama, to help hide the because I never. For months, you never heard anything about a consumer price index, not in your Statesman.
No. They do. They have it, but it's been under control, so it hasn't been news. In fairness to the press, and I think the press is absurd. You know, of course they are.
You're a big fan of the press.
But, yeah, I mean, the press is ridiculously biased, and they don't teach anything. They simply they simply go after whatever their bias is. So I don't. There's no real information there. It's all data points to confirm the bias that they already have. And so the answer is, though, there really hasn't been news. So the news in consumer inflation is that it's been very, very low, and it has. Now, that doesn't mean it's not misreported. It is, but this is not a new phenomenon. It's always been there. But to your point of 20,000, it does matter. And the fact of the matter is, I don't know why people's 401k isn't going up. Oh, yeah, I do, because they didn't believe in it and they didn't invest in it. What they did was they parked their money in a fixed account, in the G account, in the F account, in their TSP. But if you were in stocks over the last 35 years, that's all I can tell you, you went up 25-fold. That's what the market did, 25-fold. Real estate didn't do that. Gold doesn't do that. XYZ doesn't do it. Bonds don't do it. Nothing's come even remotely close. And it's not just the last 35 years. If we go on, hang on, I let you ask your question.
Right.
Now I got to finish up. So when we talk about these things and say people aren't getting rich, that's because they're not playing. That's really my point of this being a milestone. People have got to get on board this and quit always figuring out what's wrong. And I'm not saying you live in a Pollyannish world, and there's nothing wrong with pointing out what's wrong, fighting the good fight, get better tax policy, get better immigration policy, fight these people, fight these lunatics out there that really want to destroy everything. But the reality is that they can't, because business has been evolving and changing and growing. And when we sit there and govern our own finances by emotion, which is what people do. Well, I'm not emotional. No, I'm just reading. I'm just growing. Really? And you missed the 25-fold increase in the last 35 years. That's what you missed. That's it. And that's the reality. You don't want to say it was emotional, then don't say it's emotional. I'm not picking on you. I'm saying generally speaking, hear it all the time. And we have this, whether it's a Republican, it's Democrats, you hear it over and over and over again. And now it's the liberals' turn to worry about the end of the world and the polar bears are going to drown and all that stuff, and therefore they're not going to invest. So it's just a swing back and forth as to why we take this perfect thing, which has created more wealth than anything else in the world, and we proclaim it doesn't work. It's only for the 1% or the 0.1%. The billionaires get all the money. You know what? No, I wasn't a billionaire, wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and now I have enough money to be able to give money away, to educate my grandchildren, and to do whatever the heck I want.
Is that true? You're going to buy the radio station?
But, Dave, here's the problem with that. You mentioned the last 30, 35 years. Now, what if you're somebody in their mid-20s, late-20s, early 30s, and you start investing in the stock market when it was already up there in the first place? Secondly, you know, it's like the horse races, like my dad used to say. You know, the people in the back room where the jockeys are back there, a lot of them have those little tips. The $100 bettor goes up there. He knows where to place one place to show money on. You know, you're trusting your money to somebody on your stock, bonds, mutual funds, whatever. And, you know, unless you really have somebody you can trust, I hate to say it, though, the average person is not going to get rich in the stock market.
And, Mark, that's a great point, and we'll talk about trust in a minute, which we always do with Dave Petzo. And we always hear these stories of these athletes that trust their financial advisors, then they end up broke. How do you find someone that you can trust with your money that's going to take care of it?
Well, you know, to me, you do want to try to find somebody. But even in the meantime that you can't find somebody, it's a fairly straightforward, and I'll circle back to that, Kevin, but this to me is one of those arguments that's, you know, how do you find somebody? I don't really know what I'm doing. You know what? You do know what you're doing. You can't spend more than you're bringing in. You need to save a little bit from the get-go. Time is on your side, and you have to invest. Now, if that means putting your head in the sand and not making up a bunch of hokey numbers out there that are, you know, from some doomsday blog site, and figure out why it didn't work for you, and you're listening to people that it didn't work for, that really just, you know why they didn't work? Because they quit. They put money in, and they were so smart, they took it out. They took it out after 2008. They took it out after Brexit. They took it out after the stock market crashed in 1987. They took it out after the dot-com implosion. They take it out whenever there's a little bit of a bend in the world. So they buy high and sell low and repeat that behavior over and over and then say, you know, it's really only billionaires that get to play in this game. For those people who are, if you will, put their head in the sand, that just really don't pay super close attention all the time, and they just leave it in and left alone. Can I share one quick thing? Do we have time for this?
Only because
you're going to make
you.
Time.
Only because it's you.
Thank you so much. Fidelity, big company. Lots and lots of tens of thousands of clients, hundreds of thousands of clients, decided once they wanted to figure out which of their customers were the best investors. Is it older age people? Is it women? Is it men? Is it people that have a doctorate? Or is it people that go to college, people that don't? And they sliced and diced it up so many different ways, age groups, a whole bit. And you know what they discovered, Kevin, the very best investors were?
No.
The people that forgot they had an account. The ones that left it alone and let it grow. I know it's kind of funny, it's kind of cute, but it also says, hey, we pay so close attention, we think we know so much, that we dial in and start making decisions that you'd have been better off forgetting about and leaving it alone. If people would start, spend little, and leave it alone, they're going to do fine in their 401ks. That's the lesson. And we say from a low point to a high point, yeah, 20,000 is high.
Let me jump in here, though, because, you know, the 401k is an interesting thing, and a coworker and I get into a debate about this all the time. You know, whether or not you should contribute to a 401k if your company doesn't match it. What are the benefits back and forth on that? Because Dave Ramsey is like, they don't match it, don't do it, according to my buddy. I don't know that for sure, but mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think you do it if it's the easiest thing to do. First of all, it gives you a tax deduction right off the bat, okay? It allows people to do something they haven't been doing. Number two, most people don't save on their own. They just don't. So you say, well, I'll save. You know, don't worry about me. I got it covered. If you take it out of their paycheck, they save. If you don't take it out of their paycheck, the vast majority of people won't. So as a safety precaution, I'm going to tell people, save. Take it out of your paycheck. Now, and then we can sit there and we can, you know, talk about, pull the spreadsheets out and all that stuff about whether it's tax deductible or should you put it in a Roth, an equivalent amount, you're in a low tax bracket, you're in a high tax bracket, all those things you can run on a spreadsheet. Here's the reality. Spreadsheets, burn them. It's absolute BS. There's very few people that live their life in a spreadsheet. Everybody else needs certain parameters in their life. Like, I will work out this day. I will not just eat cake. I will not just drink beer. I will put money away. I have to do that. We have to have parameters in our life, or we don't do it. And so if we think about and try to figure out what just the right thing is, we're actually sitting around analyzing irrelevant stuff. The point I'm trying to make here, this isn't hard. Start. And if it is, Kevin, your 401k, that's the first thing that makes sense to you that's offered, and you say, I'm going to put 5% away, you know what? The littlest part is whether they match it or they don't, or whether you should have done a Roth IRA or not. The point is you're starting. And if I can get people to start and I can get people to stay in the game, they win. They get rich. And the market is high. Yes, it was high at 10,000, it was high at 5, it was high at 3, it was high the first time, and the second time it got through 1,000. That's the reality of the markets, and it will keep going higher. The end is not here yet, and for people to sit around and talk about, well, it's too high, it's too high, it's too high, that's all you've said, and that's why you don't have financial independence. That's why milestones matter. Yeah, it's just a number, but this is the lessons. This is the lessons. Grab your kids, pull them around. Talk about it. Say, this was the day that the Dow crossed 20,000. I remember when it was 10. I remember it was 5. Because you know what, kids? This thing called capitalism, it works. And I want you guys to play in this because it's going to make you financially independent. And then you can set money aside. And then you can start your own business. You will have your own freedom to do and be whatever you want to be. Or we can go to the sidelines and we can cuss it, we can throw things at it, and we can complain about it and say it's really a game that's rigged for the wealthy, and it's not.
Dave Petso on fire today. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. You're listening to 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
Being there matters, and in a world that can be uncertain, your United States Navy protects and defends America on the oceans. Where there are threats against America, anywhere around the globe, your Navy ships, submarines, aircraft, and most importantly, tens of thousands of America's finest young men and women are ready to defend America at all times. When pirates threaten commerce, your Navy is there to ensure the world's oceans are safe and free from attacks. When disaster strikes, like the typhoon that devastated the Philippines in 2013, your Navy was there, providing medical supplies and relief to those in need. When drug traffickers attempt to use the ocean to ferry narcotics to our borders, your Navy is there defending America. Your Navy is deployed around the world, around the clock, always ready. When it comes to protecting and defending America, being there matters. And America's Navy is already there.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. And if you prefer email, that's just fine. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net, P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, it's PetsoFinancial.net. All right, well, you know, exciting day on Friday. And we really are in a strange, if you will, almost like political watch. What crazy stuff could happen today? And we miss, really, the fundamental reasons why stocks move. We get caught up day to day. I mean, think about this. If I'm going to own a company, just, you know, you have shares in a business, street corner, you can drive by it, and so you can really relate to it. It's not a piece of paper in this thing called the market. It's a real business, okay? So you have a piece of this real business. Well, you would never act as foolish as, well, I wonder if I should sell because the president said this. Or a global leader said that. You know, in many ways, this reminds me of people going, I can't believe Obama did that. Okay. What did he say he'd do? That. Okay. And you're shocked. Well, I didn't think he really meant it. Things are not going to be handled perfectly. It is a massive undertaking. And this administration has said they're going to make a lot of changes in 100 days, just like most administrations coming in. They're coming in, they want to get on it, and they do get on it. They get on it right away. And it's one thing after the other. I'm not here to defend how well the ban was handled. It was not handled well. But here's the reality. It's much ado about nothing. If you guys want to talk politics, that's great. That's all. That's available all week long. But when it comes to the market, when we overlay some political nonsense, we get a distorted picture. Will it really affect the profits of your street corner business? No. Whatever's happening today, we won't even talk about in a week. You know, just think about this in anything you are remotely passionate about. Okay? So I can do, you know, whether it's, let's say it's sports. So how relevant is it after the game is done and everybody's running around analyzing what could have, should have happened? What happens is it's done. And we move on to the next breathless story in sports. And in finance, it's the same thing, right? Well, what about this problem? A couple weeks later, we don't even care. And in politics, same thing. Goodness gracious. I mean, you still have the Democratic leader, Pelosi, who's so famously, inconceivably awful to say such things as, well, we need to pass it so we know what's in it. That's the genius of the leader of the House. Now, she's not the leader now, but my point is, they're still there. They're still there. It's like it doesn't matter what people do. So does it matter what Donald Trump said a week ago? It won't in another week. It won't. We'll move on. We'll move on. And the country will actually go back to work. And, people throwing chairs or whatever, barriers through the windows at a college at Berkeley. Yeah, it'll stop. It's not going to go on forever. These things are just going to be buried. And yet what we do is we end up with our own stock portfolios saying this is how we should manage around things like this. I wonder what's going to happen. And the market does move a little bit day to day on that. It can when something crazy or a new details of a new order or a new order coming. Like not one that's going to necessarily happen today, but here's what we're going to do. Dodd-Frank is going to be wound down, changed, not eliminated. Yeah, bankers are all going to be free. I can just hear it, right? Can't you hear it now? Oh, yeah, now it's we're right in the same place we were in 2007. No, we're not. No, we're not. But leave a problem there. Ask the government to solve it, and they'll more than solve it. They overdo it. They overshoot. So if one regulation would be great, why don't we do 3,000 regulations? Because that would be better. We know that. Excuse me. We know that's how it works. We know that. That's what happens with regulation. So it constantly builds and builds and builds and builds. So Dodd-Frank, the idea of it diminishing, banks took off on Friday. So we're going to see that kind of move. I'm not saying it won't happen. But to trade around that, that just doesn't make any sense. So if you're worried, stop it. I mean, we go through the 20,000 barrier, and it's like, well, you know, now it's really high. It was high at 19. It was high at 18. It was high at 15. I heard the same whining when it was at 10, when it was at 5. Get over yourself. You were wrong. The world didn't end. It did not end. And I'll bet it doesn't this time. Can the market pull back a couple thousand points? Of course. Or more. Of course. Will it? Of course. Then why am I in? Well, because it might be from the 30,000 level. I don't know why we want to make this so hard. Why we take this beautiful thing and try to complicate it, try to ruin it for ourselves. Why? Why do we do that? I'm really not sure, except what we're going to dive into over the next few weeks. I'm going to talk about back to basics. And we've talked about this several times, but what is dollar cost averaging? Why does it work? Putting money away over a lifetime and building up millions of dollars. It works. And we try to complicate it to make it so it doesn't work. So we're going to talk about those things. Why? Because, you know, when it gets tough, it's back to basics, right? That's how you stay in the game. That's how you stay in the game. You know, simple things, think about this, and we'll talk about bear markets. I got to take a break here, but we're going to talk about what happens. When you make the most money, you see, that's in a bear market. You just don't know it at the time. By contemplating and thinking about that, how will I react? What am I going to do in a bear market when it happens? Helps us to prepare and be better when it does. All right. Our number is 580-5436. Excuse me. 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-545.
Take your life back and make this your best year ever. Call 800-970-6155 now.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO is the number, 580-5436. And if you prefer email, that's fine. Shoot us an email, Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And, yes, that would be your cue to ring us up and be part of today's program. Hey, I know a lot of people missed it. This is the most disrespected bull market in the history of the planet. It is. It's inconceivable to me. how low interest rates, highest corporate profits, highest dividends, highest corporate cash flows, safest balance sheets ever, and people wind all the way from 10,000 to 12 to 14, you get the picture. Always too high. Always it was about the Fed, you know, and it was all phony and things like that. Listen, let's get back to basics a little bit and talk about this. I want to talk. Chris Davis talks about this with his dad and his granddad and all the lessons, the life lessons of investing. And I thought, you know, we need to talk about these things. Why? Because we forget them easy, don't we? You know, that's the beauty of these great stories. It's the $1,000 hot dog. It's a simple, easy story. You know, and of course, any parent would look for great teaching moments. But he relates this story when he was very young. And he was working a summer job for his grandfather. And it was about lunchtime. So he was going to borrow $1 from his grandpa to go buy a hot dog. And his grandfather said, you could spend $1 on that. But imagine if you had invested that during the time of my life. And you earned the returns that I earned. That dollar that you just spent on a hot dog would be worth, as you know, $1,000. Now, I couldn't help but stop thinking about that. You know, I mean, or, you know, to really start thinking about that and remembering all the compound interest and things like that. And we're going to relate a lot of that because this is where people miss it. It's compound. The way to wealth is compounding over time. Not waiting to put money into an investment when someday you're making enough that you have extra, because then all the years are gone. And when we stop and we think, well, what about? It's true that over decades, a dollar has disintegrated greatly, some 80% over my lifetime. 80% of the value of a dollar is gone. Well, that doesn't bother me any because the value of the market has gone up 30 or 40 fold. Except if you're not in the market. You see, if you were sitting there saying in cash, in short-term investments, I'm willing to earn, I'm going to call it 1% because I'm being generous. When inflation is consistently taking your cash and making it worth less every year, there's nothing safe about that. And I'm not sure where we have this definite, well, I keep some cash in my safe. Oh, so you throw a little bit of money away every single year. Why? And how? Why is that dynamic safe? Because we only lose a little bit at a time? Isn't that a funny perception? Where we think about it in terms of if I only lost a little bit of money, that's safe. But I want to put all of this weight on, risk-wise, on this mechanism called the stock market, the great corporations of the world. So if you don't mind, let's not call it a thing because it's not a thing. It's a collection of the greatest corporations on the planet. Not all new ones, right? Like, I don't know if this is going to work. You know what? You know Johnson & Johnson works. You know that Pfizer works, right? You know that Dow Chemical is really good at what they do. You know P&G makes good soap and has global distribution. You can buy into these now. Not when they're like high-risk new adventures. But you can sit back and look. There is no mechanism remotely like this. It's astounding. And that's where a dollar turns into $1,000 over a lifetime? And we get hung up on the next couple points move, couple percent. Let's just see where we set ourselves up to fail at this really simple mechanism by thinking about it on a short-term basis. We're nuts. We've completely lost our mind. We try to take this simple thing and make it so complex, so hard, that we're trying to make it so we can guess what the future is. I don't know why. Because we're in a battle of wits with who? We're about, you know, why? Since everybody, all the great investors, have consistently said, I can't time the market, and the only way to wealth is through long-term compounding of your wealth. But I'm going to do it different? Why? Why bother, you know, admiring Warren Buffett? Except for the part about market timing or the fact that he says that more money is lost waiting for a correction than ever is lost in a correction. That might have been Peter Lynch. We ruin this over silliness. You see, and we argue about, well, the market's high. It's the same thing. You heard that in the recording with Kevin. It's always the same thing in people's mind for a year after year. Well, now that we're at 20,000, you know, the reason it's up 25 or 30 fold since you started is because, well, it came at a low period or whatever. There's always a reason why you didn't invest at 3,000 or at 5 or at 10. There's always a really good reason that somebody else did and they were successful because they held through all those periods. You see, it's not a question of whether it's 25-fold. Would it matter if it was only 20-fold? No. So we put emphasis in the wrong place. We make excuses all the time why it isn't working for us when it is a really straightforward, simple playing field. Ready? You have to start, and you have to finish. That's it. Those are the two main rules. Remember Fidelity and their study. Age groups, male and female, education, job status, income status. All of it sliced and diced into all these different groups of people. Who are the best investors in our whole group? Right? It's the people that forgot they had an account. They left it alone. Isn't that amazing? Don't you think then, doesn't that tell us that there is a fundamental problem with investing? We can't do the simplest thing. Hold on. Hang in there. That's the rule. We have to do that. Quit reading. Quit burying ourselves in nonsense that keeps us out of this wonderful story. Hello and welcome to another hour of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo, and these, of course, are my opinions only, and they're not this station or anybody else's. And most importantly, and I do mean this in all sincerity, nobody knows what the future is. Nobody's trying to predict the future. We talk about it, what's cheap and what's dear, and may want to overweight something. And as an example, we may talk about Apple, you know, which had great earnings this past week, and you know, stock took off, just took off. But it's always talked about, you know, is it really all about the iPhone, which just turned 10? 10. Can you imagine that? What changes that's brought in 10 years? It's unbelievable. Just we take this for granted, you know. Best camera I ever had, except for the one I had right before that, which was the iPhone 5 and so on and so on. Best phone you ever had. I'm sorry, phone. Camera. Phone. I can get on the internet. I can use it for a flashlight. Record things. Spell check. The list goes on. I want to know what the weather is. Push a button. Oh, yeah, ho-hum. We just take so much for granted, and then and I think sometimes when we don't, just stop and go, wow. And I think we do. We then get caught up in this world of negativity, which is just swirling around us all the time, and then we don't invest. Anyway, we use examples of great corporations like Apple. It doesn't mean you should own it. It doesn't mean you should. But man alive, are these some of these tech companies just doing great? Apple's doing great. We always already know Google and Netflix and all these other rock stars are super, and Amazon's destroying retail. I don't know that that's good. I agree with lots of people on that. It's a scary, brave new world. It's changing so fast. So I get that people are concerned in it, but at the same time, it's a lot easier to have a few bucks in an uncertain world than to not have any money in an uncertain world. And so those are the principles we want to talk about. In setting aside all the noise, you don't have to find the new $1 to $10,000 Microsoft. You don't need to do that. You don't. To put it aside and be more secure. So that's what we're going to talk about. But I wanted to take our education segment here and use this off of an email that I got last week or two. Daryl and Cindy, thank you so much for sending this. And as promised, I wanted to, where we had adequate time. It's a great question. I recently retired, and my age is 60. During my working years, I invest in the 401k, and I almost always invest in stock mutual funds and rarely bond funds. Listening to advice, I've been hearing that I should put part of the money into bonds and not all in stocks. I put 20% of my 401k in different types of bond funds. Well, a couple months ago, as in particular, when Donald Trump was elected, the stock market took off. Anyway, I'm adding to this. Stock market took off. The bond market went down. So my long-term bond funds went way down. Acting on emotion, I took the money out of that fund and put it back into stocks. So here's my question. I really like the self-awareness there, don't you? Acting out of emotion, I took the money out. Now what do I do? So this is great. So now that those bond funds are down, do we put it back? Number two, should I avoid additional bond funds for the time being? Basically, your thoughts on bonds over the next 12 months or so. All right, thank you again. Daryl, I appreciate you taking the time to write that. This brings up a million questions. It really does. So let's start with, if you will, people need to understand, well, why would I lose money on my bonds? Bonds is a big category. It's like saying stocks are all the same. They're not. Bonds aren't all the same. But generally speaking, okay, a bond is a promise to pay a fixed amount of interest, and you hope the company will stay in business, or the government, what have you, long enough to pay you the principal back on the bond. Okay? Now, thought of as something like the U.S. government, this is not a concern that they won't pay you back. The value of a dollar certainly is, but that's another story. So basically, if you think of it this way, think of a teeter-totter. So if interest rates are rising one end of the teeter-totter, then the price of those bonds is going down on the other end. Okay? Prices rising means interest rates are falling. And so an upward spike in interest rates, which is what occurred at the election, is devastating to a long-term bond. And here's why. If I had a 2% bond for the next 10 years, or 4%, doesn't matter what the interest rate is, you may have been happy, but whatever that bond is now, it's a higher interest rate for a new one. So if I bought a bond a year ago at, say, 2%, Treasury bond, at 2%, and I now have 9 years left on this 10-year Treasury, but new rates are 2.5 on a 10-year, why would I give somebody full price for a 2% bond when I could get 2.5? And the answer is, well, of course you wouldn't do that. And so somebody wants out of their 10-year bond, or 9 years now, they are going to have to sell it at a discount, and they lose money, which is why the bond funds went down. And in some cases, they went down very dramatically. Why is this so important? We have got to understand this because we certainly are near the lowest interest rates of our lives. They can't go a lot lower. So when I say we need to prepare ourselves for a higher interest rate environment, that only states the obvious, right? Okay? That's not a prediction that we are imminently, like in the next 12 months, which I'm going to set that aside right now, what are my thoughts on buying bond funds within the next 12 months? Don't do it, okay? That's simple, easy. But that's not a prediction that interest rates are going to skyrocket over the next 12 months. Yes, the Federal Reserve wants to raise interest rates. Yes, if Donald Trump gets one-third of what his agenda is done, then the economy will start to grow faster. Again, putting pressure on interest rates to rise. But I don't need to make that prediction. I'm simply going to predict that they can't go a lot lower, which is the only environment that's good for bonds. If I'm going to lock in at 2.5% today on a 10-year treasury, with inflation at 2.5%, I hope, I'm saying I guarantee I won't make any money over the next 10 years. Why would I want to do that with a large amount of my money? I don't want to do that. I need to defeat inflation. I need to. Or I can't really pull any money from my investments. So the answer is I want to go very low on bonds. And I'll come back and circle back to that in a moment. But what we need to understand fundamentally is not run for the hills on your bond funds. You don't have to. This is a process over time. It is also something that may fit right now because you may need the money in 6 months. It may be a short-term bond fund. It may be high-yielding bonds. It may be a floating-rate note. It may not be a classic 10-year treasury where the only thing that matters is interest rates rising and falling. There's many, many aspects to it. So when we think about that with the bonds, I'm not trying to make an interest rate prediction. I'm not saying we should act all or none. Don't do that. This is one of the classic mistakes people make. Well, I think we should be in small cap. Oh, let's move 100% of our money to small cap. Well, of course you wouldn't do that. We've talked now for a couple of years. I'll give you a classic example of wrong, that emerging markets are the cheapest markets in the world. They are, and they're even cheaper now relative to the U.S. Bad move to put any money there. But imagine if you'd have put all your money there. Not a good move. This is not all or none. All I'm saying is when it comes to bonds, it's much more, a lot more depth. There are a lot of things to consider, and we're trying to give a simple picture here that in rising interest rate environments, not hyperinflation, not rising to 20%, just plain rising, they're not good. So income alternatives, to me, is the answer. So let me just tell you what we're doing in our income models, okay? We're trying to find answers, whether it's REITs, real estate investment trusts, both public and non-traded. There's mutual funds out there that have non-traded REITs in there. I know it's a big word, and a lot of people are going, what the heck is he talking about? I don't understand half of what he's talking about. That was for the people that do. For the people that don't, doesn't matter. Traded or not, let's just leave that aside. That's not an important detail. We're trying to find places that we can get additional income that does not move in exact correlation to the markets, okay? So will that be in something that could be like a closed-end mutual fund? I know. Again, what is that? These are the areas that I want to be saying what you need to do is explore outside of the traditional bond stock allocation. In my opinion, that's why our allocation programs in retirement, as I've screamed, are totally broken, can't work, absolutely moronic. And here's why. When you go back and you're looking at these Monte Carlo simulations, that's another big word for saying, we do, what is a Monte Carlo simulation? It's a computer doing a million, you know, possible outcomes. You know, in a second, boom, here's what we have 90% certainty you can live off of 4% income or 3.99, whatever, and it all comes back to around 4. You know why it's broken? Because in that input are 7, 8%, 6, 5, 10-year treasuries, 30-year treasury bonds. That's what interest rates are in our model. Where are interest rates today? They're at 2.5. What you're saying is let's do our inputs, let's run a million calculations on something that doesn't exist today. That's the absurdity. So it doesn't even exist. Those interest rates don't exist, but we're running the models the same stinking way. Bonds don't work. They can't work at this level. It doesn't mean you should go sell all of them. It means you need to think about what you have. And that's the problem when people hear that. They'll hear somebody for the last 5 years telling them they ought to sell bonds. Well, obviously that was wrong. You didn't have to sell bonds the last 5 years. You may not in the next five. But tying your money up at 2.5% in a 10-year treasury and wanting to draw out 4% income, I do in a 3% inflation world, I have no idea how that would work. It can't. So we have to think about the ground conditions. That's not a prediction. It's simply saying this is what it is. So what I've been reading about putting 40% of my money into bonds will not work. What do I do? And that's the real question. What do? We look for other income sources. And you know what? Puts us back to equities, doesn't it? So really now we're saying, look, what you need to be thinking about is 100% bond portfolio you do, or stock portfolio, with some cash. Not 100%. Some cash on the side and some floating rate notes, which are really not bonds, but they kind of are in the same category. So at least when interest rates rise, you're going to rise with them. It won't devastate you. But what we need to do is find new sources of income, even when we don't like the price movement. That's the hard part. Again, what is your goal? What are you trying to do? If we focus on our goal, what is it I'm trying to do? A lifetime of income I can't outlive, no matter how long I live. Cost of living adjusted. Really, seriously, isn't that what every retiree wants? That's all. That's fundamentally it. That's all I want to do. And yet we ask these silly questions like, well, how am I performing relative to the market? What does the market have to do with an income portfolio? Very, very, very little. But we have to measure because that's what human beings do. As we figure out ways to screw up our thinking. Yes, you have to measure. Am I doing the right thing? But the right thing is my portfolio keeping ahead of my income needs? And when we focus on price and we focus on that as the defining moment, then what we do is we end up buying equity index annuities and stupid high commission products. We don't build a real portfolio. We don't focus on the right things. We get wrapped up in fear, Wall Street casino, all that stuff. And then we miss the 30-fold increases over the last 35 years. We miss all of that when we don't focus on the right things. So back to your fundamental question, can I buy bond funds now? Of course you can, but they need to be short term. They need to be floating rate. They need to be intermediate, no longer than that. Need to be some high yield in there that are not as interest rate sensitive, because we can't go in and allocate money to our portfolio that we know can't keep up with inflation. That doesn't make any sense at all. So it's not an easy answer right now. Generating income, finding bond alternatives, very difficult, doable. But you have to put up with bigger price movement. And that's where we get back to our fundamental question that we ask all the time. All the time. What are you managing for? What is your objective? If it's income for life that you can't outlive no matter how long you live, cost of living adjusted, then quit focusing on the daily price movement. Just stop it. What is the matter with you? I mean, it's absolutely crazy. It's absolutely crazy. This is what I want. This is the medicine I need to take. I need an income growing portfolio. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go take these other drugs over here. Why would you do that? I'm going to go sit around and drive myself crazy with day-to-day news and trying to figure out if I should be doing this or zigging and zagging. Instead of relaxing, go see the grandkids and chill out and leave your portfolio alone and be like the Fidelity people. Be part of the best producing, highest return segment, the people that don't even know they have an account, because they're not hyperventilating about every single piece of news, every little market gyration. For 35 years, market's gone from 750 to 20,000. That's the Dow. By the way, if they actually accurately measured it, it would have been actually higher, but let's not go into that. That's good enough. In spite of all the doom and gloom, the market corrections, sometimes super severe, the constant, what do we do with Brexit? What do we do with this? What do we do with Donald Trump? What do we do about the immigration ban? What do we do about new deregulations? What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And then we asked all those questions, and in spite of all of that, it works, because the great corporations of the world figure out a way around it. And they pay ever-increasing dividends, more income. When we focus on price movement, does it really matter over the last 70 years that Procter & Gamble price moves on its stock? Or is it more relevant to me that one penny per share dividend in 1970 is 70 cents today? Huh. Let me see if I can focus on price movement, drive myself crazy, instead of a 70-fold increase in income just since 1970. What are you focused on? Daryl and Cindy, thank you so much. That's what we want to be thinking about, income production. Not set allocations. We've got to think. There's no mathematical formula to knowing what the future is. I simply know that if we tie up money at 2.5% with 40% of our portfolio and want to draw out 4%, not a mathematician. Don't think you have to be to know that that won't work. So I have to think different. Be different. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Thank you again for the email question. Hey, let's ring up the phones now, huh? Seriously, haven't had a call yet today. Really do want to talk to you. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station.
For details, that's 275-8131.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you again for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Let's go to our buddy Jim. Jim, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Yeah, I didn't want you to be shut out today.
So. I thank you for that. I knew we could count on you coming out of the bullpen.
Well, thank you much. You know, this Berkeley thing takes me back to the good old days.
Mm.
I'll tell you what, I graduated in 68. And I'm from New Mexico, and I went to college in Texas. And so, anyway, in 69, a friend of mine and I decided we'd go out. You know, we were young and gay, and using the word gay in the good old original definition of the term. Anyway, so we decided we'd go out to California, and, you know, and so we headed for Berkeley. We got an apartment right across from the University of California campus. And I'll tell you, those were exciting times, you know.
Man alive, I'm impressed you even remember those times.
Well, I'll
I mean,
tell
the
you.
Late 60s in Berkeley, I would have guessed anybody who was there, that was a big fog of what actually happened.
Well, I got a job at Canada Dry Corporation in Berkeley,
uh-huh.
And it was May 15th, 1969. I'm coming back, you know, in my car from work, and so I hear on the radio that something had happened on the campus. And whenever something happens on the, you know, Berkeley campus, it's not good. So anyway, I walk from my apartment across the campus, right?
Right.
So I'm going through there, and, you know, and it pretty much most of the campus looks like a war zone, you know. There are trash cans turned over, smoldering fires, tear gas, you know, in the air. And at one point, I passed a cop car with three cops talking. So anyway, so the Telegraph Avenue comes up and dead ends at Sproul Plaza. You know, it's interesting. My last name is Sprouls. You know, just interesting. Sproul Plaza. So anyway, come up there, and there's some students sitting on the campus working, you know, across the Telegraph Avenue. Well, that day, these rioters had gone up and down Telegraph Avenue, torn up the place. And so there were about 20, cops in riot gear, you know, in a line facing us. We were looking, you know, toward them. And then about 10 o'clock at night, you know, 10 o'clock that evening, the students get up and start to disperse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I asked one of them what was happening, and it was curfew. So that weekend, that was a Thursday, that weekend, well, also, you know, Reagan was the governor of California, and Reagan didn't put up with any crap. So Reagan called in the National Guard. I mean, there were National Guardsmen with fixed bayonets that weekend, and it was wild.
Yeah, that would have been a wild weekend. That's amazing.
So history repeats itself.
Yeah, it does. It does. All right, Jim. Thank you for sharing, buddy.
Take care.
Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hey, Dan, you hang on here. That's a great question, what we do with those Ginnie Mae's. So I want to give it adequate time, and we're kind of back up against here at our Fox News break. So we're going to go ahead and take a break here for Fox News. Again, our number, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We've got three lines available, so please do ring us up. We've got plenty of time left today. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso.
Okay, Fox News. We report, you decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
You know, it's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing to me. And I've been enjoying, you know, like Pandora and all these other things we take such for granted. But, man, I know every era feels that way about their music. But are you kidding me? What came out of the 70s and 80s? It's like it's, oh, great music time. Great music time. For sure. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. And I'm going to go here to Dan, but let's go ahead and ring him up. I have no other calls backing up Dan, so let's get on the lines, 580-KIDO. Dan, thank you for calling and waiting. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dave. I have a question about Ginnie Mae funds and what one ought to do. My folks have... I kind of look after their finances.
Mm-hmm.
Now they got into Ginnie Mae's, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago. They've done really, really well.
Yep.
But with interest rates possibly going up, net asset value is probably going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So what and I listened to your segment, you know, at the beginning of this hour about options, and you did give me some good options. Is it? Should we be afraid of Ginnie Mae? Do we really need to get out of Ginnie Mae funds now?
No, I don't think you have to bail all the way. The difference with Ginnie Mae's to a straight up Treasury, they're both guaranteed by the government, so you're talking about a very safe piece of paper. But at least with the Ginnie Mae, the duration on the bonds, again, I'm trying not to make this complicated, but at the same time to help people understand. When you're paying interest out and principal, it shortens the duration because over time you get your principal out of these bonds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're really doing is collecting a little bit of principal every month, and they're buying new bonds. So as interest rates rise, the yield will actually very, very slowly, not like it's a good thing, because you're right, the net asset value will decline. But it won't be as bad as a straight-up treasury that does not have any of the principal paid until it comes due in, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years,
yeah,
whatever it is, right? So, Dan, there's a big difference in these bonds as far as its volatility to interest rates. But it will be a long time before you are going to see much improvement in yield. It isn't a big principal payment coming back every month, but some of it makes it a little less volatile. So I definitely prefer them over a straight government bond fund. But again, during a rising interest rate environment, Dan, I think there's other better alternatives, which includes floating rate notes. Again, not trying to find a high risk area for your parents, but something more comparable. How old are they?
One of them just a little over 90. One of them will be 90 soon.
Okay. Well, you know, at that age, I don't think we want to scare them, right? So let's not scare them at all and make them feel like they have to be rethinking everything. If you're just taking care of it, I would probably move to something that's not quite as fixed rate, something that has a little less interest rate sensitivity to it. But if it's going to be something they've done for 25 years and it's been successful, I think the most important thing, Dan, is to not, you know, not upset the apple cart, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's comfortable and happy. You can probably leave it alone. I don't think it's so detrimental to them that you need to get out. But if they're not really looking or paying attention, and you are, I think there are better decisions to make in the interest rate world. And once again, that includes going shorter duration things or even with zero duration in the floating rate space. I think would give them a much better floating rates is what you think it is. As rates rise, that'll actually pay more. Therefore, there is no sensitivity, which is why I said there really is zero duration on them, because rates rise means the bond will simply pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but there is credit risk in that area, and there can be huge credit risk. So it has to be done with a mutual fund the same way you're doing it now, and so it's spread out. So you'll have to do some homework to find something that's in a quality space, or you really could be buying something you're not really aware of what the risks are.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
I appreciate that, and I listened to the your part with Kevin early on about starting – you know, just getting started and staying with it, and I've been fortunate. I retired last year, and I have plenty of money to live on because I did, like you said, I didn't get too excited about things and just kept letting it build.
Nice. Good. You left it alone and let the markets take care of it instead of your intellect ruining it for you.
Well, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been very, very fortunate, and I just – I've enjoyed listening to you over the last, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years off and on, and you give real sensible advice and make it easy to follow and try and get people to, like you say, at least get started and not screw it up.
Well, thank you, Dan. I sure appreciate it. Well, thank you, and thank you for your compliment. I appreciate that. Something
okay.
I've enjoyed for a long time. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks, Dave.
Have a nice day. Bye now. And our number is 580-5436. It's 580-KIDO. The board's clear. I don't have anything else I want to talk about. So I guess if we have 20 minutes of commercials left, we'll just play it for everybody. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, let's start with a couple minutes right here, and then we'll get that out of the way and give people a chance, hopefully, to give us a call. It's 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave.
950. Refuel your family with a step back in time to Rockies on Overland or search Rockies Diner on Facebook.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436. That's our number, and we could sure use a caller or two. If you prefer, email dave@petsofinancial.net. What an amazing week when you stop and think about this. I mean, what Donald Trump's been president for 2 weeks now, right? I mean, it's one thing after another, but the financial world has been the focus initially. I couldn't agree more that's right out of the chute. Because if we really are going to get this economy into a different gear, we have got to get regulations diminished. The only way is to squeeze down the size, the impact, the overhang of government. That's the only way. So when we're focusing, just this week, for example, Department of Labor rules are being pushed out. That's huge. I know the headlines will be nobody has a fiduciary responsibility, and I don't want them to throw the whole thing out. I really don't. There's some bad actors. I want them gone. I want some more regs regarding the bad actors. Okay? Want that. You know, annuities and things like that have got to come down. But that's huge to the industry. So now, on a smaller scale, it means that people are going to potentially, if we're making changes, going to be able to find help where they couldn't. The new rules were only going to diminish the amount of available help to smaller income people. Huge week. The idea that we're going to have Dodd-Frank repealed and things like that, huge. Financial stocks took off. Earnings were good. I mean, there's just so much going on. But the news coming out of the White House and all has been very, very favorable to business. No big surprise there. I think it needs to be clear with what the way the news is, and then we'll jump right to phone calls here. Everything's negative all the time. There's nothing they can do right, and all of the bureaucrats' jobs are in danger. But think about this. If you really want D.C. to try to get some stuff done, what you have is a group of highly, highly successful people. Highly successful people. Billionaires, whatever. That's the stunning part. So you wind up with that, and you have people in there that aren't there for a Photoshop. Oh, here I am with the Chinese. Here I am with the Koreans. Here I am over doing nothing. Doing nothing. Traveling the world for... Do I think Tillerson is going to do that as Secretary of State? Just go do a bunch of Photoshops and do nothing and be happy with that? I don't. I think it's a group of people that are in there for only one reason. They're going to set their lives aside. They don't need to pad a resume. They're not looking for lobbyists. They've already made more money than they can ever possibly spend. They're in there to do something. Make a difference. Oh, this is going to be exciting. This is going to be so exciting. All right, Richard, thank you for calling. Go ahead, please.
You talk about the change of the Dow over the time that you've been in the industry.
Yes.
Every once in a while, they come up and change the content of the Dow.
Yes.
How does that affect the growth? Is it amplify it, or does it hold it back, or...
You know, people will say on both sides, people make fun of the changes they make, you know, because obviously technology companies forever were left out of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, right? But they were obviously companies like Microsoft were very important to the world, right? It was the new industry. And so they did add companies like that. But every time they've added them, it's been at a peak. So it actually net, I think, has been a negative impact. But people will argue changing it all the time changes the dynamics. And I guess I would argue that business changes. I think it's a reasonable reflection. A better reflection is probably the S&P 500, although it's cap-weighted, not my favorite index. But if you say, okay, what about small caps, which are more evenly weighted? It all points to 10% plus returns. So the answer, Richard, is if we think of the market as a mechanism that averages 10, but it does way more than that and way less than that during other periods of time, that's the best way to think of it. So, yes, it has been a funny kind of negative impact, certainly the last decades that I've been involved, where they pull companies out at exactly the time they're turning the corner and add companies that are peaking. And that has happened periodically and makes some sense. But by and large, I think they're picking companies like put Disney in there a few years back. Don't have so many industrials that really are not that relevant, like U.S. Steel, things like that. So those shifts, I think, have been on balance, pretty well done, but on balance and actual negative, meaning the Dow would be higher if they hadn't shifted those companies out.
What would the Dow be like if the same companies that were there 30 years ago were in the Dow?
Well, you can't. 30 years ago is closer, but you really can't because, again, companies split and spin off divisions. Hewlett-Packard is, you know, multiple companies now. Many companies, as they split off, you can't, and sometimes they diminish themselves to the point they're not a good reflection, so they're removed. But because of those splits and spin-offs, they are having to make changes periodically, even the last 30 years. But generally speaking, most people feel it would be a little bit higher if left alone. Again, you can't be exact because many companies have left. But we really are. And another analysis shows that when they've made additions and changes, that they blew it in the reset. And you go back years. You said 30 years, but you go back years before that, the Dow would be closer to 30,000, not 20. The Wall Street Journal did a piece on that within the last couple of weeks. But that goes back more to the 1930s, I believe, is when they were focused on that change. It might have been the 20s. That one was incorrectly dealt with, and so the Dow would be at 30,000. But see, for me, Richard, the point of this is this. The next 5 or 10,000 points is going to come on the upside. So quit worrying about the next 1,000 or two on the down. And it doesn't matter what the number is. It's just those big round numbers that we start talking about where we really would be, which is a little bit higher.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your question and your call very much. Thank you. And our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Marsher. Marsher. And you are actually at the Ada County Jail. Is that real?
No, sir. I'm actually in prison.
You're in prison. Not okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, thanks for listening.
Which means I have and own absolutely nothing, but I do get a very small company retirement. And I just want your recommendations on how to invest it so that when I get out in about 8 years, I don't have to come back here.
That's good for you. Having a little money might actually help you start a business, huh?
I'll be close to retirement age by then, but, yeah, business would be a good idea.
Yeah, yeah, at least staying out of there. So 8 years to go?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Put that money every month into a growth mutual fund, and then here in 5 years, growth. Here's what it's really called. Here's what I would do because it's trying to make it simple. But there's nothing wrong. You can go online, learn a lot of things. We've got podcasts online, too. So there's some different mechanisms you can continue your studies, and I think it would be great. So you could actually become a rock star investor by the time you got out. Not kidding either. You really could. But anyway, the answer is basically equity income funds, dividend payers, have everything reinvest, put it in there, and don't worry about what the world is doing. And give it at least 5 years from now before you made any changes at all, because you're still going to have 3 years to let it grow. And what I'm really talking about is leave it alone. Leave it alone. Let the markets take care of it. Put the money away every month. This is not hard. You have to start, and you have to finish. So now you're about to start. Start. Open up an account. You can do it online. If you have any trouble, you can call, hopefully, I don't know what your phone privileges are, but you can call someone local for help or call, you know, 1-800 number for any of these mutual fund companies. Get it started, get it diversified, and then don't stop. Start, don't stop.
Okay, thank you very much for the advice.
Thank you for your phone call. All right, bye. Take care now. Our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. Yeah, we'll take a quick break here. We got to take one. And we do have time for one call, and I just lost our caller, so the board's free. 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now.